But you've done away with the, well, not you, but the bylaws have done away with the slate system. Mm-hmm. Isn't that there a concern that what happened at ASFA last year could happen at the CSU level?
I mean, let's, I mean, what happened at ASFA?
Well, I mean, positions where it went uncontested. I think a few positions, there was a position that was left unfilled.
To be fair, though, ASFA the year prior had done very little. Right? They weren't particularly public, people weren't volunteering, weren't engaged with them. There wasn't very much public interest in what ASFA was doing, and over the last few years, and there wasn't a huge emphasis to get engaged and get involved. I don't think the CSU is in that situation. The CSU should never really be in that situation. I mean, I'd be happy to see 150 people run for council. So I'm not really worried about that. If people need a tribalistic team identity, to just, like, to give them an incentive to run for elected office, then they probably shouldn't be running for elected office. But independent, who appoints the people to the independent body?
I don't know, Jesus.
Okay, there you go. You've answered your own question, haven't you?
Well, I mean, this is just off the top of my head. Maybe asking the faculty associations to name members to the JB instead of...
Faculty associations are more... Well, first of all, we've taken out all the references to faculty associations in the bylaws for a number of very clear reasons that are legal in nature. You can't have people outside of the corporation who have no formal role within the corporation have influence on your organization like that.
Or mandate them
to do anything. So, for example, that would be like sitting on the board of directors of Concordia University and saying, like, the people who appoint the auditing committee will be appointed by McDonald's and Imperial Tobacco and RBC. Like, you're all separate corporations. You can't have an influence.
But at the same time, if you have members of JB who are named by council, and they're ruling on matters related to council.
Right, but there's no other way to do it given that council is the board of directors. The only other alternative would be to have JB being a self-appointing body. But then the problem is that depending on who ends up on judicial board, like there's no
separation there.
Like, there's no separation there. There's no checks and balances on, you know, on who they appoint and why. So JB could then turn into a dysfunctional clique. Right?
Mm-hmm.
At least with the JB members being appointed through council, there's a process of public scrutiny.
Public, yeah.
There's and then it's really clear.
Why was it decided that you need a revamp system for removal of execs and council?
The first time
I didn't realize I was
funny. The first
okay.
time that I got involved in CSU and Lex was actually in the recall petition in 2008. Yeah. And that was when we were trying to...
Has it been here that long? Jesus.
Yeah, when we were trying to remove
Deanna
Cashby
from office.
Yeah, from office. And what happened with that is we did all this work. We got a whole
thousands
bunch of signatures.
Thousands and thousands of signatures.
Regardless of the fact that there were executives interfering with sealing petitions and things like that, that we did get more than enough signatures, and then our petition was thrown out.
Yeah.
And that was it, right?
And then there was, like, a series of court proceedings, right? Like injunctions and stuff like that to get the CSU executive to recognize the petition. By the time where the CSU executive had to actually call a by-election on their own existence through the recall process, it was already March. It was election time. So there was no point anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we've created a system here that means that you can't delay endlessly and that people who students want to remove from office can actually be removed from office. In other words, we are presenting bylaws to students that make it easier for us to lose our jobs, because that's how democracy should work, right? So you get a petition, the petition automatically calls a special general meeting, there's a quorum for that special general meeting, and then there has to be a vote, like 2/3, with cause to remove someone from office. It's a clear process, it's a process that's familiar to a number of other student unions as well, and it can actually be implemented with or without the consent of the executive. Right.
And even the chair, it actually at one point says that, like, if the promoters and the chair cannot agree on a time, then the promoters can just go ahead and do it without the chair.
Yeah. That stops, like, the chair from being, like, a tool of the executive as well, right? So you present a petition to the chair has to go validate signatures. If the chair doesn't, the chair doesn't want to call a meeting, then those, like, the petitioners can actually just call a meeting themselves,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it means that the executive, council, the chair can't actually block this process from happening.
One of the added requirements for removal by petition is an SGM.
Mm-hmm. It's not an added requirement. Previously, you would have a petition,
mm-hmm.
and all that petition would do would be it would force a recall vote. So
right.
basically, it forces a by-election, right?
Right.
So there's no added requirement. Now there's no by-election process. There's no polling stations. There's no nomination period. There's nothing. Now it's straightforwardly, like, the petition calls a special general meeting, and students vote at a special general meeting instead of voting during an election period, which then has to follow the elections guidelines, and
which
then that takes another 35 days, which also costs money that the CSU can block. You see?
Yeah, but isn't it easier to vote at a polling station than an SGM? Don't you worry that, like, students might not have the chance to have their voices heard at an SGM rather than at a ballot box? Because the turnout in an election is going to be bigger than the turnout at an SGM.
I think in the case of someone wanting to recall an executive or a counselor, it's because they've done something really wrong.
And if they've done something really bad, then people will show up to that SGM.
just like when the Board of Governors did something really wrong, people showed up to the SGM.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just logistically, if somebody has a class or they've got to be somewhere, if at a, you know, at an election, you have several days to have your voice heard, whereas at an SGM, you have 2 to 3 hours.
Look, I mean, the problem there, you have to sort of weigh the processes, right? If you have an election, what that means is that you've created another 50 different steps that the executive can block this from happening. Like, for example, we can just, like, change the locks on the CEO's door.
Not do the bookings.
Not do the bookings. Cancel the computer request.
Spend all the money and there's no money to have an election.
Yeah, like, sorry, like, we don't have money in the budget. Like, oh, sorry, the CEO is, like, you know, like, can't come into work, you know? Like, there's a million different levels where the executive can block an election from happening, and we saw it happen in action in 2008, 2009,
which,
right?
Which is the same reason we've made it so that SGMs can't be blocked by executives, because
right.
We've seen in the past the abuse of those powers, and we're trying to limit that power.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a weighing, sure, a couple people may have class, but in the end, like, those people won't get to vote either if the executive just block a by-election, right? So...
Mm-hmm. One of the things that has come up about the new special bylaw I, the student space, formerly the student center, fee levy, is that the wording is a little vague in how that money can be spent.
Right. Can I outline it for you in a really clear way?
Sure.
Because this is, like, very lawyer-y stuff. So basically... there was a very minor wording change that allowed a broadening of the definition of what that fund could be spent on in terms of the change between a student union building and student space, right? And there's also been a bit of an issue because it says legal contingency. So people think just legal contingency, but it's actually a contingency fund for all these things. It's a student space contingency fund. It's an accessible education contingency fund. It's a legal contingency. Right? But broadly, the purpose of that fund remains student space, and you can see that by the huge amount of time, energy, and legalese writing invested in that bylaw talking about student space. It's clear to us, right, as mandated, like, that students do not want the Faubourg St. Catherine building as a student center. You know, council voted on it unanimously, students voted against 2 referenda to increase the fee for that purpose. That's particularly clear. One of the major things that we've heard from students over and over and over again, though, is the feedback that they may not necessarily want one individual centralized building. We don't know if that's the case because we're in the research design process right now for the survey we've been mandated to perform by council. But by, say, February, March, we'll have the results, and it's possible that students will come to us and say, hey, we actually like this sort of, like, constellation of student spaces we have around both campuses in the annex buildings, you know, on Bishop, on 7th floor, wherever else, right? And that potentially that's something that students are interested in. At a time when student space is very, very much under threat by the university administration, so for example, we don't have a lease on our own offices, we could get booted out tomorrow, right? It's important to also have wording that allows us to protect the spaces that we already maintain. Same thing with the annex buildings, right? And right now, if we got kicked out of the annex buildings or whatever, there would be no resources available for us to buy or rent similar kinds of spaces. And certainly, like, at the place we're currently at with the fee levy, you can't buy a building with $10 million. You just can't, not without financial investment from the university, right?
Which was one of the fears, actually, in the saying no to the student center, is what happens if we say no? Like,
mm-hmm.
Is this... So, are we going to be left without student space?
So this means that if student clubs, IEAC groups, you know, fee levy groups get kicked out of their spaces by the university, there is a fund available for us to help mitigate that process in the meantime. It also gives, like, if the vision of, you know, that comes out of the student space survey is not one of a centralized building, which you can still buy a centralized building with this fund, eh? That hasn't changed, just to be clear, but if the vision that comes out of it isn't that, then the CSU executive would have to go and make this bylaw change anyway, right? So we're basically just broadening the definition now as part of a broad reform process because it facilitates students' wishes. The access to education part is, I think it's been misconstrued a little bit by some people who, I guess, didn't read the bylaws very clearly or don't understand the bylaws very clearly on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's, like, a strike vote, right, at the CSU, by a 2/3 majority or whatever, money is going to get spent on that either way,
mm-hmm.
right? And it can be very expensive. So when we're talking about this bylaw on fees, the collection and spending thereof, we said to ourselves, what sorts of things could hinder the basic core operations of the CSU? Paying our staff, running our services, those sorts of things. And there's really two things, you know, settlement of the legal action,
mm-hmm.
and a strike, a prolonged strike, right? This is not an editorial position of the CSU executive that we support a prolonged strike, but the nature of a student union is that this is a thing that can happen, right? So if that situation did arise, then money would be spent on it. The question is it spent out of the CSU's operating budget and means that we can't pay our staff, right? Does it mean that we have to cut back on our service hours? Does it mean that Hojo has to be open less? Or can we use the interest from a fund that's sitting there, right, mm-hmm. from the previous fiscal year, right? So basically, this is not student money. It's literally just the interest on the fund, right? So it's not touching the principal student investment. Whereas if that money were coming from the general operating account, that's actual student dollars, union dues, right, mm-hmm. that are going towards paying for that. So in a way, we've just said, in this sort of like drastic circumstance where we would have to liberate these funds, we want to make sure that we don't stop the CSU from doing the other things it normally does, operates housing and job bank, advocacy center,
all which will be very important,
throwing parties, you know, all of these things, right? Like, we don't want to interfere with the core operations of the union. The line about settlement of a legal action was basically just on recommendation of of Patrice and of Philippe, like just sort of general, like, you should probably throw this in there as a sort of legal, it's just a legal note. All it's saying is, for example, the CSU has been involved in a number of large-scale legal actions in the past. There's been a fraud, there's the Sharon Navidad thing, there's the, what's her other name? Cheryl Navidad, and then there was the other one. Marie Liane.
Oh.
And there's that. And then there's the CFS legal battle, which will go on for several years. The CSU is, you know, like many student unions, exposed legally. And we wanted to make sure that, God forbid, should the CSU ever be in a position where they have to settle a legal action, if their assets were seized, right? Or if that was, like, if the CSU had to pay something, that wouldn't put the CSU in an operable position, right? So, like, in the same way that we want to preserve the core operations of the CSU, in case of a strike, it's basically just saying, like, this fund can be accessed. The fact is, it doesn't change anything, because if we were sued and lost a lawsuit, the Student Center Fund is an asset of the CSU,
mm-hmm.
and it would be seized anyway, right? So basically, it's just a little line that the lawyer said, you should throw this in there.
Is this applicable retroactively to the money already collected in the Student Fund? The Student Center Fund? Excuse me.
I don't really see what you're saying. Students are voting by...
Can the money already collected over the past several years also be used for, like, the legal, money that was collected explicitly for a student center under a...
Students are voting to change the nature of the fund itself.
Right, so it's not just the fee that that's been collected,
right.
It's the fund itself.
Right.
That's what I'm getting at.
Right.
Okay.
But, I mean, and again, the core purpose of this fund is still student space.
Right.
In the same way that it's a student center, right? Like, the idea of a student center is about student space. Really, that's the core purpose of this fund. The other things are completely ancillary, and this is really a question about broadening the definition of student space to allow for whatever the results of the student space survey, whatever they might be, to make sure that the voices and values and interests of students are reflected, and that the CSU, like, say the student space survey says that students do appreciate having, like, multiple rented spaces in and around the downtown core in Loyola, and that they don't care for a centralized building. What this does is it takes away the cop-out from the CSU executive to say, oh, well, even if you want that, we can't do that because this fund is just for a building, right?
Mm-hmm.
This makes it really, really clear that, you know, like,
this
students...
money is for what students want it
this,
to be.
Exactly. This money is for what students want it to be for in terms of student space needs.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but if a no campaign had officially registered, they would have gotten some kind of... reimbursements or campaign financing or something?
$325.
Would you care to hypothesize why the No campaign has not officially registered?
No.
Certainly there are members of, there are people who are, who comprise the No campaign, people who are speaking against the bylaw changes, that are familiar with the CSU bylaws and standing regulations, so there's ignorance really isn't an answer. Why they didn't bother to go and do that, I don't know. I mean, they would be able to put up posters and stuff like that if they had.
Also on the ballot, aside from the bylaws, there's the kind of symbolic votes about...
access to education and student representation.
Exactly. Seeing as how they're kind of symbolic, why have the vote?
I don't know that they're symbolic. I mean, I think that what we're asking students for is a stronger mandate, right? It's also about keeping the dialogue about representation and about tuition alive during this month where people are a little cooled down because of November 10th. And having that conversation take place.
We've also seen these sort of, I guess you're calling it a symbolic vote, actually take some sort of resonance with the university. Last year when students voted against the bottled water on campus, the university responded. And we've seen...
It was my understanding that they had to give all the bottled water to Judy as part of her severance package.
Liquid gold. And we've seen the university respond to this, and it's clear that the university, or at least the Board of Governors, doesn't want to respond to individual representatives who are on the board, so perhaps a strong message from students will make that clear. Mm-hmm.
Going back to something we were talking about 20 minutes ago, there's 5 open seats, only 4 candidates running. So first of all, to like what, why do you think there's such a low interest in running for these open seats in this by-election?
The only seat that's not being run for is an independent. There's 2 independent councillor seats open.
Right, and there's only 1 candidate for those 2 seats.
Do you know any independent students?
I used to be one.
Yeah? Have you ever met any others? Because they're really hard to find.
I've met a few.
You actually
sure.
see this every year, especially the independent students, even when we had the slate system and we had this large sort of mass of teams. If you paid close attention, most teams never filled the independent students, and I think that's a sign that independent students may not feel as engaged with the university.
Because normally they're only taking 1 or 2 classes. Mm-hmm.
But there's also candidates for JMSB who are pretty much running uncontested.
Yeah. Well, the sort of independent student thing is a lot of independent students are in transition from one program to another. I've seen that in the past, having run for council and having run for executive, seeing independent students who wanted to get involved but were like, but next year I'm going to be in this faculty, or next year I'm going to be in this one, so it doesn't make sense for me to run as an independent student now. As far as John Wilson students go, I think that, like, in general, this is a strange time of year to get involved in something as big as the CSU, and I think a lot of people... would probably feel more comfortable getting involved in the general elections, and you're sort of getting thrown into something halfway through.
Right during finals.
But that being said, I believe that there were actually 4, possibly 5 people who originally said that they were interested in applying, and for various reasons that some of those people decided not to run. Ismail could probably tell you more details.
So there's no concern that this would be a situation that you'd run into at the general election at the end of the year.
No, and I mean, like this is something that I always have a problem with the Concordian's editorial position, is that everything is about apathy, right? This isn't about apathy. This is like, there's enough people running to fill all the positions. It's a difficult time of year to run. It's only in 1 faculty. There's very few seats available to begin with. Like, this is pretty standard. Like, this is how the CSU always works. Actually, last year, 2 years ago, there was a by-election around this time of year, and like they had way less people running. There was no competition.
All right, well, that's pretty much everything. This is going to be a bitch to transcribe. 46 minutes and 50.